Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science and music from Austin, Texas. I'm Michael Brennan. A lot of activity this week. A meteorite hit Russia February 15th. We'll get the latest on that from NASA. Plus, the Landsat Data Continuity Mission launched successfully. Jupiter and the Moon pair up, and Song of the Week by Phosphorescent off his upcoming release. Here's your scientist soundbite.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, have ignition, and liftoff of the Atlas V rocket on the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, continuing the 40-year legacy of preserving Earth's natural resources from space.
That was Mission Control during the launch of the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, or LDCM. NASA launched the latest in its series of Earth-observing satellites this week. Our congrats go out to the Landsat team, and we look forward to seeing images as they come back from LDCM, and to speaking with scientists about how they're using LDCM to monitor Earth's changing landscape from space. Here's Emily Howard with News of the Week. Welcome, Emily.
Hey, Mike. The Great Backyard Bird Count is an annual four-day event where citizen scientists of all ages and expertise levels are invited to help scientists track the health of bird populations. This year's event will be held on February 15th through the 18th. The Great Backyard Bird Count, now in its 16th year, draws a large number of bird watchers from across North America. For the first time ever, people from around the world are invited to participate in the event. Learn more at earthsky.org.
A meteorite turned fireball flew across the sky over Russia's Ural Mountains, showering fragments of rock over the area. More than 1,000 people were injured as the debris fell to the ground, many of them hurt by broken glass. Our thoughts go out to them. We'll check in with NASA on that event in a moment, and you can get continual updates at earthsky.org.
A near-Earth asteroid called 2012 DA14 by astronomers will pass very close to Earth on Friday, February 15th. Astronomers estimate that, when it's closest to us, the asteroid will be about 21,000 miles or 35,000 kilometers away. That's much closer than Earth's moon, which is about 240,000 miles or 380,000 kilometers away. And it's closer even than some of our own orbiting satellites. Observatories will be turning their telescopes toward the action, and we'll have footage and more at earthsky.org.
Already strained by water scarcity and political tensions, the arid Middle East along the Tigris and Euphrates rivers is losing critical water reserves at a rapid pace, from Turkey upstream to Syria, Iran, and Iraq below. UC Irvine scientists used data from NASA's Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment satellites and found that between 2003 and 2010, the four nations lost 144 cubic kilometers, which is 117 million acre-feet of water. That's nearly equivalent to all the water in the Dead Sea. Researchers attribute the bulk of it to pumping of water from underground reservoirs. This rate is among the largest liquid freshwater losses on Earth, the scientists reported in a paper published this week in the Journal of the American Geophysical Union. That's Science News of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is by Phosphorescent. It's off the album due out next month called Muchacho. This song is called Song for Zula.
Recognizing
I will not open myself up this way again. And I lay my face to the sword, and gnaw my teeth to the sand. I will not lay like this for days now upon end. You will not see me fall, nor see me struggle to stand. To be acknowledged by some touch from his gnarled hands. You see the caged call, I said, come on in. I will not open myself up this way again. I see the shadows that we cast in the cold, clean light. Ah, my feet are gold, and my heart is white. And we race out on the desert plains all night. See, honey, I am not some broken thing. I do not lay here in the dark. Burning thing, let it make the fire ring. All that I know love as a Cajun thing, just a killer come to call from some awful dream. Oh, and all you folks, you come to see, you just stand there in the glass looking at me. But my heart is wild, and my bones are steel, and I could kill you with my bare hands if I was free.
That was Song for Zula by Phosphorescent. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. A meteorite struck Russia on February 15th. Over 1,000 people are reported injured from the event, with the majority of injuries being from broken glass caused by fragments of the meteorite and by the shockwave. NASA scientist Bill Cook, lead for the meteorite's environment office at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, and Paul Shoda, research scientist at the Near Earth Object Program at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, spoke about the event at a teleconference.
What we know at this time is as follows. A a rock and a small asteroid or large meteoroid, depending on how you want to define it, entered the atmosphere. This rock was about 15 meters in diameter and with a weight of about 7,000 metric tons. It was moving at 18 kilometers per second. And for those of you who deal with normal units, that's about 40,000 miles per hour. So it hit the atmosphere above Russia, moving at that speed. It penetrated at a shallow angle, less than 20 degrees. It lasted over 30 seconds in our atmosphere before breaking apart about 20 to 25 kilometers, which is 12 to 15 miles above Earth's surface. When it broke apart, this produced a violent explosion, and there may have been several smaller events as well, in the vicinity of 300 kilotons of energy, which produced a shock wave that propagated down as well as through the atmosphere. And when it propagated down, this shock wave struck the city below, causing large numbers of windows to be broken, some walls to collapse, and minor damage throughout the city. So when you hear about injuries, those are undoubtedly due to the effects of the shock wave striking the city and causing walls to collapse and glass to fly, not due to fragments striking the ground. There are undoubtedly fragments on the ground, but as of this time, I know of no fragments that have been recovered that we can verify with certainty. A preliminary orbit for this object indicates it originated in the asteroid belt with a farthest distance from the sun, about 2.5 times Earth distance. And it does appear to be an asteroid in nature. We are asked the question, well, why wasn't it detected before? And based on this preliminary orbit, the reason it wasn't detected by telescopes on Earth was because it literally came out of the day side of our planet. It was in the daylight sky, and as you know, telescopes can't see things in the daytime. So this object came out of the daylight sky, and as a result, was not detected by any Earth-based telescopes. So that's what we know at this time, and I'm going to pass it over to Paul Chodas and let him talk about the asteroid 2012 DA14, plus anything he might care to add about this event over Russia.
Well, good afternoon. What an amazing day for near-Earth objects. By an incredible coincidence, we have two rare events happening on this very same day, with asteroid 2012 DA14 passing very close to the Earth. For an asteroid of that size, 150 meters a half a football field in size. And we have a small 15-meter object, which I would call a tiny asteroid, actually hitting the Earth at a shallow angle and creating a significant explosion. This is the largest recorded event since the Tunguska explosion in 1908. This was very large for a meteorite hit or fireball. But let me talk a little about the DA14. It has already passed close approach. We are continuing to track it. The asteroid has passed the Earth. It's on its way out, and it won't return this close for many, many years. Regarding the Russian explosion, there was a shock wave. Why is there a shock wave from something coming in like this? I have to say, asteroids enter the Earth's atmosphere at a tremendous speed, 40,000 miles per hour, which, by the way, is actually much faster than the DA14 is passing the Earth. And in order for this tiny asteroid to slow down, the atmosphere will absorb that energy. Okay, and so it is actually emitting the energy as heat, and it's emitting it as light. This event must have been brighter than the sun if you were there to watch it. It's just incredible. Tiny asteroids the size of this one that hit over Russia hit the Earth on average about once every 100 years. These are rare events, and it's an incredible coincidence to have them happening on the same day. The Russian event, the fireball, is not related to the DA14 asteroid in any way. the asteroid that hit over Russia was a very tiny asteroid. These things are very faint until they get close enough to the Earth to be seen. An asteroid such as this, which approaches the Earth from the daytime sky, is virtually impossible to see ahead of time. NASA is the lead agency in the worldwide search for asteroids, and we've done a good job at finding the large-sized asteroids. We're at about 95% of the population of large asteroids.
The Earth intercepts about 80 tons of meteoritic material per day.
And I could add to that, Bill, that small objects the size of a basketball, let's say, hit the Earth almost every day, once a day, and on average. And car-sized objects hit every month or two. So little stuff hits the Earth all the time. We just don't know about it, or it's all burning up in the atmosphere. It's absorbed by the atmosphere, and so it's not really an issue.
That was NASA's Bill Cook and Paul Chodas. You're listening to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science and music. Deborah Bird is in the studio now to talk about the moon near Jupiter on the 17th and 18th. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Mike. The moon is back in the evening sky. Yay!
Yay.
I always love to see the moon, and I think a lot of other people do, too. So, yes, and the planet Jupiter is the brightest star-like object in the evening sky now. And on the nights of the 17th and 18th, you can see the moon near Jupiter. So those two brightest objects in the night sky will be right next to each other.
Awesome. So we've seen the moon near Jupiter a couple times in the last few months. What's going on with that?
Well, Jupiter is on a yearly cycle with respect to its visibility in Earth's sky, and that's not because of anything that Jupiter's doing. It's really because Earth takes a year to go around the sun. Jupiter takes about 12 years to go around the sun, and so it's moving more slowly than we are. So from Earth, we look out and see Jupiter, and we see it, you know, moving in front of the stars, but very, very slowly. Only completing one full circle around the sky every 12 years. Mm-hmm. So here we are, you know, in our closer orbit to the sun, just going whip, 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 whip around the sun, mm-hmm. 12 times for every one time of Jupiter. So we see the planet on this yearly cycle, you know, that's driven by our own orbit around the sun. So what happened was that in early December of 2012, we passed between Jupiter and the sun, and that placed Jupiter opposite the sun, rising in the east when the sun was setting in the west. A full moon also rises in the east when the sun is setting in the west. And so Jupiter was near the moon in December. It was also near the moon, not quite a full moon, but a pretty big moon in January. And in both of those months, there were amazing photos of Jupiter and the moon, like just awesome photos that we put together galleries at earthsky.org. So if you come there and search for the words Jupiter and the moon photos, you'll see all these great, great photos taken from all over the world. So this is really, this February conjunction of Jupiter and the moon is really pretty much the last time you're going to see them in any kind of spectacular way. So do watch for them. Jupiter will be near the moon again. It'll be near the moon next month and the month after that, but it won't be as bright a moon. And Jupiter also is not in its best place for viewing. It's kind of shifting over now toward the western sky. So watch for these two and just enjoy them on the 17th and 18th of February.
Okay, will do. So what's the moon going to look like around that time?
Well, on the 17th, the moon is at a first quarter phase. So what that means is that we'll see it kind of look like half a pie in our sky. And, of course, we're seeing only half of the day side of the moon then. The next night, the 18th, it's a waxing moon, so it'll be a little more illuminated, what's called a waxing gibbous moon. So more than half lighted, but less than full. In the nights after that, like around the 19th, 20th, 21st, the moon will be moving through a part of the sky that has a lot of bright stars in it. And you might notice other bright objects near the moon in those nights. So come to earthsky.org and we have charts for every night that show, you know, what's going on in that night's sky. And you'll be able to identify which stars are near the moon.
Okay. The moon and Jupiter. Look out for them this week. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Mike.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and that's our show. This week's show was recorded in Earth Sky Studio in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Special thanks to our musical contributors. For more on the music or the science you heard, visit earthsky.org. Until next week, be good to one another. I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't have you terrified. What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't. The art of the next stage. What you don't know won't have you terrified. What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you won't know, but you